Palestinian cause.
We are marking the 45th anniversary of the Land Day. While about 25 countries around the world are participating to voice their support for Palestinian cause, we are stressing on our right of return to our lands and that Jerusalem Al-Quds will remain the capital of Palestine. People who marked Land Day proved they will keep fighting the Israeli occupation to gain their rights.
On the eastern parts of the enclave, near the separation fence, Palestinians also held an event stressing on their right of return to the occupied lands. They also expressed their refusal for the recent normalization of ties with Israel and considered it as a stab in the back of the Palestinian cause.
We stress that Israeli occupiers will leave our land by force, and Palestinian resistance won't remain silent against Israeli violations of Palestinian land and rights. We call on the world to stop the normalization of ties with Israel. That gives Israel a green light to keep up its inhuman aggression and crimes against Palestinians.
We are proving that we won't give up defending our land. What happened on this day is unforgettable, and we stress that we won't allow Israel to take over our Palestinian lands. We mark this day to express that the resistance is our way to defend Palestine and force the Israeli occupation to leave.
Land Day is marked every year by Palestinians since March 30, 1976, to honor those who fell while defending their lands from being illegally seized by the Israeli government, when Israel declared its intention to annex approximately 5,000 acres of land from its Palestinian owners in several villages. The Land Day comes as Palestinians are calling the international community to stop the Israeli expansionism and land grab, vowing they will keep fighting until liberating Palestine and its capital, Jerusalem Al-Quds. Ruba Shabet, Gaza.
France is responsible but not complicit in the Rwandan genocide. That's the main conclusion of a report on the Rwandan genocide that the official Duclair Commission submitted to French President Emmanuel Macron. In 1994, extremist militia from Rwanda's Hutu ethnic group slaughtered more than 800,000 people from their own ethnic group as well as the Tutsis minority in a matter of 3 months. France intervened before, during and after the genocide, but not to prevent it. François Granet, who is the author of The French State and the Genocide of the Tutsi in Rwanda, says the French government's report into the issue does not go far enough.
From 1990 to 1995, French decision makers decided to maintain Rwanda in their zone of influence. They decided to arm the regime and to support the Hutu's extremists against Tutsi before, during, and even after the genocide. The French authorities had been perfectly informed on the issue. Even if France did not have any intention to commit genocide, the French support had an undeniable facilitating effect on the Hutu's extremists.
Experts have proved that French authorities received many alerts during the ongoing genocide. In this video shot in Rwanda during the genocide, a French sergeant warns the French Army's Chief of Special Operations that Tutsis are being massacred not far from where they are. But the French colonel does not react.
Complicity means help, and France allows the creation of an extremist government and its recognition by the international community. The perpetrators of genocide are welcome in France, and they find shelter in France and in Belgium once the genocide is completed. France delivers weapons before, during, and after the genocide. All this means political complicity.
Rwanda is a small country, mostly agricultural, with very few natural resources. No big deal. So why this was of interest to France?
France gives the support to dictators. If one goes down, the others will not trust France anymore. In the beginning of France Africa in the 60s, France abandoned one dictator and the consequences were catastrophic. Mitterrand and other French presidents swore not to abandon any other African dictator.
The report on Paris's role in the Rwandan genocide has other downsides besides trying to obscure France's real role. The probe was carried out with Parliament, where Macron's allies have a majority, refusing to give investigators full access to relevant archives. This new report highlights the responsibility of France in the genocide in Rwanda. However, this National Assembly refused to open all the archives, and French authorities still do not want to admit their complicity in the genocide. Chris Den Hunt, Paris.
The European-wide Islamophobia epidemic has shown little sign of curbing as more countries join the criticised burqa ban. Swiss Muslims have been the latest to feel the effects of hate after a referendum passed banning all face coverings in public spaces.
Being free is to be able to show our face, respect women's dignity, have our own identity, and therefore I do not understand the discourse of people who want to imprison women behind this veil.
Following the ban, I reached out to Zainab, a German national who travels regularly to Switzerland, and asked how the ban has impacted her.
This ban makes me really sad and angry, because it's the second article here in the federal constitution against the Islam. I think we have to understand that it's not against the niqab or against the minaret. It's against the global Islam. It's just an Islamophobia act. And I think they are not finished. They are looking for the next step.
The ban isn't the first anti-Islam move adopted by the Swiss, as I found out after speaking to the Islamic Central Council of Switzerland.
I just can confirm you. I mean, Swiss chocolate is great. Even we Muslims, we love it. And Toblerone is now even halal. So it's a great thing, yeah? In terms of Islamophobia, this is less great. Yes, indeed. Actually, we are indeed suffering since 2009, when this first referendum came up against the minarets, which has been indeed banned with 57.3% of the Swiss population voting yes for this ban. We are constantly, during the last 10 years as a community, have been attacked by the media, have been the target of certain stereotypes.
Local campaigners and activists have vowed to fight back against the ban. However, the global Muslim attention fixed elsewhere. The defenders of Islam in Switzerland have yet to receive the support they deserve. The reasons behind enforcing the ban vary from country to country, with some claiming it's a security threat, while others simply say that it contradicts Western ideals. Now, whatever the excuse, the traumatizing effect that the ban has on devout Muslim women has been made clear by those who suffer from its enforcement. Robert Carter, London.
Another weekend of protests in the UK, the southwestern city of Bristol, the front line of the battle against the British government's new policing bill that places new limits on protests. Demonstrators could face new fines of up to 10 years in prison for damaging a statue or memorial. The peaceful demonstration descended into violence at some point. Police were pelted, protesters pepper sprayed, and charged at with dogs. 10 were arrested. Thousands took to the streets across Britain. In Manchester, they blocked the tram lines. They were forcefully removed. 18 of them arrested. The UK police crackdown on protests since the murder of a young woman, allegedly at the hands of a police officer, has been under scrutiny. Critics have accused them of using deliberate and orchestrated tactics against the protesters. Last week, police retracted their claims that some officers suffered serious injuries during attempts to disperse a similar protest last weekend. But the government has remained uncompromising. Since the violent clashes in Bristol, it's condemned the protesters. Prime Minister Boris Johnson has called the clashes disgraceful, and his Home Secretary Priti Patel described the protesters as thugs intent on causing trouble.
The contentious bill is still being debated in the UK Parliament. Critics say it gives draconian powers to the police, curtails freedoms, and does too little to protect women and girls. So far, the government has shown no sign of changing course, and those protesting against the bill say neither are they. Saeed Puriza, London.
Bahrain has hosted yet another Formula One Grand Prix. British athlete Lewis Hamilton added to his well-deserved fame by winning the first race of 2021. But in the run-up to the event, Hamilton used his platform to raise awareness about human rights abuses in the country.
In November, he received a letter from the son of Bahraini political prisoner Ahmed Ramadan, asking for the athlete to help save his father from execution. Rights groups say he confessed under torture, a common tactic used in Bahraini prisons. Hamilton has since spoken to lawyers, Amnesty International, and the Bahraini ambassador. On the eve of the Grand Prix in Bahrain, he said,
I don't think that we should be going to these countries and ignoring what is happening in those places, arriving, having a great time, and then leave.
But sports organizations have been doing just that. Civil servant Najah Yousaf was jailed in 2017 for demanding the Grand Prix be cancelled. That year, the event went ahead regardless, and for the next 3 years, Yousaf was denied legal representation, raped, and psychologically tortured in prison. Ahead of this year's event, 61 British MPs urged Formula One's new CEO to establish an independent inquiry into abuses linked to the Bahrain Grand Prix and to meet with victims and rights groups before the race to secure their compensation. Needless to say, that didn't happen.
No one wants to see their favorite sport being hijacked or used as a smokescreen for dark and sinister human rights abuses to continue unchecked. And fans have accused Lewis Hamilton now of politicising the sport because of his solidarity with the Black Lives Movement and his inquiries on the ongoing situation in Bahrain. But people in such highly visible international audiences are, of course, expected to be outspoken when they are benefiting exponentially from the public profile that they have. And they know that their silence will be seen as complicity.
Now Formula One has signed a 10-year, $650 million deal with Saudi Arabia, which, according to human rights organisation Grant Liberty, has spent at least $1.5 billion on sports washing, hosting Formula E, the Dakar Rally, wrestling, tennis, the Spanish and Italian Super Cups, and European Tour Golf over the last 2 years.
Amnesty International says, like all of them, Formula One will be used to sportswash the kingdom's, quote, appalling human rights record, let alone the Saudi-led war on Yemen that has killed and displaced hundreds of thousands of people and pushed a nation to the brink of famine. Bianca Rahimi, London.
A photo gallery was organized in the Yemeni capital Sana'a to view examples of the difficulties facing Yemenis amid the continued siege imposed by the Saudi-led coalition.
From the first moment, the Saudi-led coalition has directly targeted civilians, including those internationally protected, which under international law should not be considered military targets. Mosques, monuments, museums, hospitals, schools, universities, roads, bridges, ports, airports, everything in the country has been systematically targeted by Saudi Arabia.
The health sector is heavily affected by the ongoing Saudi siege. Recently, many health facilities have warned that the incubators may stop working completely within days due to the severe fuel shortage and lack of power, putting the lives of infants at risk. Saudi Arabia, backed by Washington, launched a devastating war on Yemen in March 2015, killing tens of thousands of civilians, mostly women and children, and imposed an all-out blockade on the country, depriving millions of Yemenis of their basic needs. Yemenis say the United Nations bears responsibility for the lives of millions of civilians, including infants, as it remains silent toward the Saudi war crimes against their country. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Al-Sab'in Hospital in Sana'a.
Hi, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, sir.
Half a kilo of Halim, please.
Hi, sir.
Hi, kitty. Good morning.
Number one, hands up. Number two, hands on the waist.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Get ready for jogging to warm up.
Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
One loaf of well-baked bread, please.
The Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers, whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change, and that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive. And make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
the debate.
Hello, my name is Gisumisha Ahmadi. Now, Kill the Bill protests continue all across the UK. While many of these demonstrations have ended in violence, there is still no sign of Parliament backing down on a controversial legislation known as the Police Crime Sentencing and Courts Bill that could give law enforcement officers more powers to crack down on protests. In this edition of the debate, we will be discussing why UK protesters oppose the police bill and how it has cleared its second reading in the House of Commons. But first, let's go to London and talk to Saeed Pourreza.
Gisu, yes, this protest happened across the country. Thousands of protesters took to the streets of London and Manchester, with cities such as Bradford, Bath, and Nottingham, among others, playing host to those protests. 18 arrests were made in Manchester city center, where the protesters had blocked the tram service. And it's become a thing, really. These protests all begin peacefully up until the riot police arrive with their riot gear and their horses and dogs, and the protests descend into violence. And police, we have seen from the footage, have really been heavy-handed in their treatment of those demonstrators. Today's protests really follow another one that happened in Bristol, a place that's seen other protests as well over the past couple of weeks. 10 arrests were made there after the demonstration descended into violence as well after the police arrived. The police in Bristol have really come under fire for their treatment of the demonstrators and for an attack on a journalist, journalist named Matthew Dretch, who works for the Daily Mirror, has posted a video of himself coming under attack by the police, who were there with their batons and shields, even as he told them that he was a member of the media. As you say, the controversial policing bill is being debated on in Parliament. It'll have to clear another vote and survive another vote in the House of Commons of the British Parliament. Then it'll move on to the House of Lords, and finally it'll have to get or gain royal assent before it is written into law. The government has supported the actions of the police. The Prime Minister has come out, Boris Johnson, calling what happened in Bristol as disgraceful. But the fact of the matter is that these protesters are out there to stay, and they're saying that they're going to continue doing what they have been doing, which is opposing this bill, forcing a rethinking of it all by the government. But we know that the fact that the government has a majority in Parliament will really give it a strong hand in getting this bill through the legislature and turning it into law. But the critics, among them politicians on the left, are saying that really what this bill does is curtail freedoms, freedom of expression, of speech, like how noisy a protest can be, and things that go with it. And they're also saying that the day that this bill is written into law will be a day that the UK, as a democracy, will turn into a dictatorship, Kisu.
Thank you very much. That was our correspondent, Saeed Pourreza, joining us from London. And also, we have investigative journalist Tony Gosling, who's joining us from Bristol. Now, Mr. Gosling, why was the police bill proposed in the first place? Seems that the police already have enough powers.
Well, funnily enough, parts of the bill, the police themselves said they didn't want. And it's a very good report by your journalist there. But one thing he missed out is there's a very, very important part of this, what is being called now here the Police State Bill, which is to do with trespass and criminalising trespass. That's one of the protests which the police were particularly violent at, even though the demonstrators in Bristol were sitting down with their hands in the air, with their hands up, you know. The police still went in with the dogs, arrested 14 or so of them. Many of, you know, that's something like, you know, one in 10 of the people who, one in 20 of the people who were there. So this is another aspect, and the timing is interesting, isn't it? Because this is all being pushed through under a lockdown, and so the mayor of Bristol, the mayor of London, the police chiefs, etc., and Priti Patel, the Home Secretary, who I think is really the one main person behind the police violence, are saying, "Oh, well, you can't protest because of a lockdown." Well, you know, the 20,000 or so people in Bristol who are about to be criminalised by this bill, of course they are going to protest. They're not going to say, well, we'll wait until the lockdown's finished and then we will, because this is the crucial stage. We're going through into the committee stage of the bill in Parliament, and at that point, this is the point where you need to make your voice heard, and you need to say to the police and to the media and to the general public and to the politicians, we're not going to stand for this bill. You know, there's a whole bunch of people been involved in this Kill the Bill protest movement, which is sprung up literally over the last month or so. But the thing is, this word Kill the Bill, let me explain for your viewers, the bill is the old bill in Cockney rhyming slang. It is what we use to refer to the police. So Kill the Bill has a connotation of killing the police. So that's why it's a bit of a cheeky word to use, but actually, of course, it's the bill they're referring to, this police state bill that they want to kill. Now, this was something that I was involved, actually, as a journalist and as a marcher back in 1994 in the Criminal Justice Act in Britain, which was the first step towards what they're trying to do to completely criminalise trespass in Britain, where they got rid of free parties. They brought in something called aggravated trespass, where the police would get more involved. Usually it's just up to the landowner to do something about it if someone turns up on their land. So there is an echo right back to the 1990s, and really what this bill is trying to do is to pick up on those the criminalisation of trespass that happened back then, and make it actually a permanent thing. In fact, it's very similar to the law in the United States, and quite a lot of what we do in Britain is they have criminal trespass laws in the US which are very similar. But we in Britain have had travelling people, itinerant people, squatters, etc., for thousands of years, since time immemorial. And this is the first time there's ever been an attempt in Britain to turn all those people into criminals. And that's why I think there's been such a move against the police, particularly demonstrations, peaceful and some not so peaceful, to show the strength of feeling, to send a very clear message that they're not going to use a lockdown to stop a demonstration against this bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Gosling. Let's also turn to journalist and commentator James Tweedy, who is with us from Plymouth. Mr. Tweedy, why is the British government pushing for this bill, despite the backlash, all these protests that we see all across the UK?
Well, I mean, there's more than one backlash, perhaps. I mean, if you're going to protest, you have to be careful that you don't alienate the majority, and by causing so much mess and inconvenience and damage to the cities where you're protesting, and that's what happened in Bristol to a large extent. They were smashing up people's private cars. My fellow guest here has mentioned the meaning of Kill the Bill. You know, I mean, it is essentially an advert to anarchists to come and have a fight with the police, which, you know, sometimes the police are quite happy to do, by the way. But these protests are—they've kind of jumped the shark, and they're likely to alienate people. So it's a problem. The bill is like a lot of crime bills in Parliament. It contains a lot of very disparate elements, and some of those are new laws to prevent violent as criminals and sex offenders and people convicted of terrorist offences too from being released halfway through their sentence on licence, on parole, right? They're going to have to wait until two-thirds through their sentence, if this bill passes, to be released. And that's something that's actually very difficult for anyone on the government benches or in the opposition to argue against. In fact, the opposition have said that they agree with that, basically. And they abstained on the first vote against this bill. But, the second is, on the second one, they voted against it. But because of what happened on Clapham Common a few days earlier, and that when the vigil for a woman who was murdered Sarah Everard was broken up by the Metropolitan Police, the London Police. But that, what happened there was done under rules, which special lockdown rules, which essentially make all large.
Well, actually, it's interesting that
illegal.
You pointed to that particular incident. Well, all of this comes at a time that it's in the wake of actually the murder of Sarah Everard, who was incidentally murdered by a police officer on her way back home. And that would sound the alarm, one would think, for the parliamentarians, you know, to be more cautious about the type of bill that they would bring into law. Or that doesn't seem to be the case, though, Mr. Tweedy, does it?
But the bill was drafted long before that happened. It was drafted, this debate's been going on for a year or two now, you know. What happened there was that the Metropolitan Police went over the top, and the Metropolitan Police is the commissioner, the chief inspector of that police force is Cressida Dick, and Cressida Dick was in charge of the operation that back in 2007, which saw an innocent man killed, a Brazilian immigrant. Was apparently mistaken for British Bangladeshi, John Charles Jimenez, and he was killed, and then the police leaked stuff to the media and told lies about it. So this person, who was by the way promoted by members of the Labour Party, she was in charge. You see, and okay, so there are these rules against that have been introduced during the lockdown against large public gatherings, and the police have been applying them selectively, and it's okay for the police to have that discretion, but on that occasion it was very obvious, you know, they'd allowed a lot of very large and angry protests and marches and things to go ahead, and then this thing was a silent, static vigil in a park at night when there weren't a lot of people around, and they broke it up quite forcefully for some reason. I don't understand why they did that at all.
Well, exactly. Mr. Gosling, I think you could comment on that, please.
That's right. We now know why. It's because The Guardian got a leaked memo from the Home Office explaining that it was directly Priti Patel herself that had written a memo to the Metropolitan Police asking for them, or in fact, she's not really asking, is she? She's telling them to shut this vigil down for Sarah Everard. I mean, she's a provocateur. Let's not forget that Priti Patel, back in 2017, was sacked for 12 illegal meetings with the Israeli government when she was the DFID secretary, that's the foreign aid secretary, and she was sacked for those, including one of the things she was trying to do secretly when she was said she was on a private holiday, she was secretly meeting with all these Israeli officials. One of the things she tried to do was to get British public money for the Israeli army in the Golan Heights. Now, she is a traitor for having those meetings, and she should never have been allowed back into government. And now she's actually managing to steal a march on Boris, really, by making him look stupid, and he hasn't got the guts to sack her. He should sack her right now for ordering the police into that vigil on Clapham Common. It's one of the most disgusting bits of policing we've ever seen in Britain, and it's no part of a democracy. This is police state policing being done specifically by Priti Patel, and we've got the memo, we've got the evidence that it was her behind it.
And honestly, Mr. Gosling, it's very paradoxical for us outside the UK to see police violence in response to peaceful protesters that are concerned about exactly that. So what kind of message do you think this is sending the world?
Well, what we're seeing here is, I think, a real hiatus in British politics at the moment. It all depends on whether Boris has got the guts to sack the traitors within his own cabinet, but I don't think he has. I think he's a very weak prime minister, and what we'll see, I think, in the next few months is we're going to see more and more confrontations over this particular act of parliament. Just think how reckless and stupid it is of Priti Patel to be pushing a bill through which is going to make at least 20,000 people in Bristol, that is the people who have got their housing problems, that were sort of homeless, people that cannot afford to either pay a mortgage or pay the rent. We've got something like 20,000 of them in Bristol officially homeless. She's going to try and turn them all into criminals. The idea here, of course, is to turn the forces of government on the poor. And what's also been going on at the same time is complete impunity for criminals who are rich. Particularly, we're talking here about bankers. And in Bristol, we've got the Lloyds Bank, the Business Support Unit, which has been accused by former police officers and by campaigners and people who've lost their property of fraud, very much like the Reading fraud that was also being done by Lloyds Bank several years ago, and they, people were prosecuted and jailed for. They're not being jailed in Bristol. So what we've seen, what we're seeing here, is the machinery of criminal justice being turned from the criminals onto the most vulnerable in society. And I think that really is as a recipe, if it's not stopped, for civil war in Britain.
And it is actually very interesting. Mr. Tweedy, the rules set out in the bill can be applied to a demonstration of just one person. What exactly does that mean?
Well, okay, I mean, maybe it can be yes, any kind of demonstration can be shut down, but actually we've had rules more or less to that effect for a long time now. It's been very difficult to organise protests in London. You have to get, you know, outside Parliament, for instance, or outside 10 Downing Street, you have to get permission. I mean, in practice, they've gone ahead, for sure. It's been done, but you had to... these are rules that were introduced about 20 years ago, there are already restrictions on the right to protest. It's not unfettered. We could turn to other things. I mean, there's been a certain amount of controversy about the part of the bill which increases the penalties for vandalising public property, in particular monuments. Not other forms of public property, but monuments. There's a thing. I mean, why has that been written into this bill? It's because some middle class white people who were attending a Black Lives Matter protest decided that it would be funny to graffiti a statue of Winston Churchill. And then there was other graffiti put on a statue of Gandhi on a war memorial. You see, so we have this thing where Britain is full of memorials to war memorials, and of course most of them commemorate at some point, or many of them commemorate the Second World War, which is the war against fascism, in which we were led by Winston Churchill. Because that's the history of it. And there are other memorials to the volunteers who went to Spain to fight in the Spanish Civil War on the Republican side against the Falangists and the Carlists, the fascists, basically. And, you know, these memorials are now, again, vandalizing these memorials could get you 10 years in jail now.
Exactly, 10 years in jail. Quite a penalty. Mr. Gosling, don't you think so?
Well, look, the main reason they're doing this is because of what happened last year at the Black Lives Matter protest in Bristol, where the statue of Edward Colston was pulled down and thrown into the docks. And there have been many of us, you know, historians like myself, who have been calling for this statue to be put somewhere less prominent, maybe in a museum or something like that, for many years, and they've been ignored. Edward Colston was a slave trader, but his name is all over Bristol. Colston Hall, you know, there's various other places, Colston Hill. So he is almost, you know, there's Colston Tower. There's various places around Bristol commemorating this slave trader. And he is supposed to be some sort of great guy. Of course he wasn't. He was making money from misery and racism, as many, of course, were in those times. And so I think
pretty
it's absolutely right
that
there was some kind of challenge to this being a prominent person. And that's why they've done this. I think that's the only reason. Look, I think this is, in a way, a bit of a side issue, because this bill, what it will do is it will give the police discretion as to which demonstrations they close down. Of course, that demonstration I'm talking about last year wasn't closed down. There were just a handful of police around. If we get to the situation where the police can pick and choose who they like and who they don't like, if there's a particular, say, for example, an anti-police demonstration, they come in with the riot police. If it's Extinction Rebellion, they start dancing with the demonstrators, then this is a police state. And that's what most people are objecting to when they say kill the bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Gosling. There's one final question. We really don't have that much time, so Mr. Tweedy, if you could please make it quick. Why do you think there is so much rush on voting on this bill? Why not give parliamentarians more time to scrutinize it?
I don't think it is being rushed. I mean, it's only just passed the second reading, and now it's in the House of Lords, and that will take a long time. They'll make amendments to it, and that will go back to Parliament. And if the government doesn't want to accept those amendments, so it's going to be quite a long period of tennis where they...
There will be enough time to scrutinise the bill?
Yeah, there's plenty of time to scrutinise it. It's been published and people can read it. The question is, why did the Labour Party abstain on it in the first place and then vote against it the second time? It's just because of what happened on Clapham Common. It doesn't make a lot of sense. The Labour Party's playing a political game. Firstly, their political game was not opposed to government.
Thank you very much. Mr. Gosling, just one final question, make it quick. Are you as optimistic as Mr. Tweedy? Do you think there will be enough time to make changes to this bill?
Well, there'll be many more demonstrations, and that's what we're going to be seeing, because we've got something like 1 million people, most of the arrests at these demonstrations have been basically young people between the ages of about 16, 18 and 22, 25. I've seen the figures of, the ages of people arrested in Bristol. We're talking here about the young people are scared about their future. They think that there is no future for them. There's no jobs. There's not the education they're getting is very poor. And so they're saying, if we cannot actually demonstrate against changes that we believe which are going to affect our future, then we are going to make some changes right now. And I think that the youngsters have decided that this bill is simply not going to go through, and they'll stop at almost nothing to make sure they send a very strong signal to our politicians that they are going to be there on the barricades, and we could even have a civil war, as I said. If you're going to make up to 1 million people who can't afford rent and mortgage, criminals, then, of course, you're going to have a serious problem on your hands, and I don't think the government really wants that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tony Gosling, investigative journalist out of Bristol, and journalist and commentator James Tweedy out of Plymouth. Thanks to both of you gentlemen for joining us on this edition of The Debate, and also thanks for following us.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Nowruz Special. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. These days, corresponding with the birth anniversary of Imam Mahdi, peace upon him, are usually the time for discussing the issue of apocalypse, that is, the end time. The apocalypse is a deep-rooted belief among all human beings. It is the end of the world, when good and evil will be disclosed for good, and man will attain his old ideal. In many religious narrations, apocalypse is the period that is related to the reappearance of Imam Mahdi, the time when the world will go through many developments. Sedition, chaos, different crises, and above all, injustice will prevail. All these evil events will end with the coming of the Savior of mankind. The apocalypse in the Islamic culture is the era of flourishing and perfection of human being. It is a period in which the divine promises will materialize. The Islamic teachings stress that before the reappearance of Imam Mahdi, the entire world will experience grave changes. Human community looks alive, but it has been beleaguered by gradual death. A lot of signs have been mentioned that act as precursors for the coming of the promised Mahdi. One of the signs is that the distinguishing of right from wrong will be very difficult. Imam Sadiq, peace upon him, says that religion will be distorted and the Quran will be deserted in that era. Corruption and immorality will be rampant. Money and wealth will be venerated like a sacred thing. Imam Baqir, peace upon him, says, the Qa'im will not rise up until great fears will happen. Seditions and troubles will overtake people. Deep differences will take place among people. And there will occur discord in their religion. As all religions have promised the coming of the Savior, the Divine Messengers also presented signs for that era which can help us to identify it better. In a few verses of the Evangel, we read, at the time when the Jesus was sitting on the Olive Mountains, the Gospels come to him, saying, tell us when will be the signs of your coming and the end times. Prophet Jesus mentioned some of the signs as follows. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars, because of a nation will rise up against another nation, and a country against another country. There will be drought and fatal diseases. In many places of earth, quakes will occur. The world will be full of violence like the times of Noah. Immediately after the great disaster, they will see the Son of Man, who will come inside the clouds with bedazzling power and glory. Today, some scholars maintain that the coronavirus pandemic is a sign of the apocalypse. Dr. Shafi'i Sarvestani, writer and researcher, says, there are certain and uncertain signs of the end time. Some of the signs, like drought, famine, flood, different diseases, and fear, have existed in the past too. They might happen again, as they are among the uncertain signs. We cannot say definitely that the events that we witness today are the ones that have been mentioned for the end time. Some narrations mention the white death as a sign. Imam Sadiq, peace upon him, has been narrated as saying, before the uprising of Qa'im, there will be two deaths, the red death and the white death, so that 5 out of 7 people will die. The red death is with sword, and the white death is with plague. Yet we cannot say with certainty that coronavirus disease is the same that will end in the reappearance of the Imam of the Age. Today, Iran and the world is facing with this phenomena, and such like diseases will take place in the world in other eras with more fatalities. Meanwhile, Dr. Sarvestani believes that coronavirus has had notable effects in the world. He continued, this disease has caused important events in the world. Firstly, a disappointment has taken place toward the Western civilization that has dominated the world. Although it used to consider itself as the final school in the world, it has totally failed to confront a microscopic virus. The failure of this civilization has been exposed in various aspects like economy, politics, society, and so on. Today, the world is properly witnessing the reality that this disease and virus has disturbed social order and discipline, and the so-called civilized societies, which used to boast to the world, are the scene of people attacking each other for paltry matters. The capitalist economy has become bankrupt, and people have become frustrated with the capitalist system. Dr. Shafi'i Sarvestani added, once Zionist Christians introduced themselves as God's chosen nation and exploited Christian beliefs in favor of their hegemonic interest. For instance, George W. Bush said before the 2003 New Year that the United States had been summoned for granting freedom as one of the divine blessings to all creatures across the world. Earlier, Francis Fukuyama, the theorist affiliated to the White House, had said heartily that liberal democracy is the final achievement of mankind, hence we are in the end time and there will be no better version after it. Today, however, the failure of this strategy has become completely clear, and the inability of liberal democracy has been exposed to the entire world in economic, cultural, social, and political dimensions. Coronavirus showed to all that the Western civilization, despite much hue and cry, is totally unfounded and seriously vulnerable. For sure, the belief in the invincibility of the Western civilization has come to its end. Researcher and futurist Hojatul Islam Said Esfahanian said, what some of the Western politicians like Susan Rice and George W. Bush used to say, and was repeated by Trump later on, has been an artificial and bogus usage of this era. The West has used different tools during the past 100 years, especially since the victory of the Islamic Revolution, to suggest to the world that we are in the end time and that the administration of the time is in the hand of the West. The West has erased the apocalyptic idea in 2000, 2005, 2010, 2012, 2015, and 2020 as the end of the world. The Hollywood has greatly contributed to the spread of this thought. The reason why people rush widely to the shops and supermarkets and loot them as soon as a disease or an event occurs in that West through the media has spread the belief that there is a horrible apocalypse. Experts are of the opinion that, in spite of all efforts to fight the Islamic view on the end time, there has been a surge in tendency toward religions, especially Islam. The world has become frustrated with the materialistic ideas and schools. The end of this world, according to Islam, is not black and bleak, but it is luminous, promising, and hope-inspiring. The rule of Imam Mahdi will be in the hand of the oppressed and downtrodden, as the Quran stresses it. Imam Baqir, peace upon him, says that rule will be the final rule. In part of Ziyarat-e-Ali Yasin, we read, greetings to him who is God's vicegerent on the earth. Greetings to him who is God's hoisted flag of justice, knowledge, and wisdom for the entire world. Greetings to him who is the reciter of the divine verses and the aspiration of all human beings.
Good morning.
Good morning.
the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.